In 2017, Irish distillers were set to launch their most innovative and experimental whiskey brand to date, Method and Madness.
There was an awful lot of buzz, an awful lot of excitement around the bottle design. What is it going to look like? What are the labels going to look like? And because it was so new, you know, it could be anything.
As Ireland's only whiskey archivist, Carol Quinn knows very well that history can often inform the stories of the future. It was Carol's job to share stories from Irish distillers' past with a creative experimental duo tasked at shaping the visual identity for the new brand's future.
Basically, anything that comes our way that we find interesting, we try our hand at.
Matthew Bulger and Emily Lidstrom are a husband and wife design duo who tell stories that are as bold and inventive as they are experimental.
We just love that feeling of excitement, and you're just kind of traveling down a road where you don't know what the destination is going to be.
Matthew and Emily were asked to create an ambitious design, the bottle and label for Method and Madness new whiskies.
We wanted to produce something which feels like it is beginning its story, but we had to feel make something which was authentic.
Their journey was guided by Carol, who helped Emily with their research, showing them designs from the past.
I had no idea if they were going to be able to take something away from what I was showing them.
In this final episode of A Perfect Blend, we're following the curious paths taken by a pair of designers in Sweden and Ireland's most noted whiskey archivist. We'll also explore the shared passion that brought them together. Love for a great story.
Through our years of working together, we've found that no matter what the project is, that a strong concept or story is essential.
I'm Julian Clancy, the host of A Perfect Blend, a four-part mini-series from Irish Distillers. In each episode, we'll speak to creators and craftspeople in the world of Irish whiskey whose work is interwoven with partners across the globe. And through their eyes, discover the power of collaboration. Episode 4, The Art of Storytelling. For Emily, growing up in Malmo, there was always a camera nearby.
I got the camera when I was 7, but I didn't know how to hold the camera, so I obviously when I clicked the button, I pressed down on the camera so everybody had their heads chopped off. The first roll of film had no heads at all. We were just all, me and my friends, we were just always drawing. I was always reading stories, painting. It was just something that was there. I don't know how I discovered it. It was just with me from very early on.
While Emily experimented with her camera in her teens, Matthew was learning how to play guitar. Growing up in Crumlin, big groups of Matthew's friends would get together to learn how to play lead guitar on their favourite heavy metal song.
I remember I was the worst guitar player out of all of the 12 or 13 guitar players, and I kind of went home really, really depressed. And I spent the rest of that summer in my room rehearsing and learning how to play the guitar. And then when I came out, I had kind of jumped over a barrier, and I was a kind of the guitar solo guy after that kind of transition. Whenever I fail at something, that's when I kind of go into myself and I lock myself off from the world. And then I kind of rush that creative development process.
Matthew learned how to tell stories through song with the band he played in, the Redneck Manifesto. And Emily told stories with her photographs. But for Carol Quinn, when she was growing up, storytelling was more of a traditional thing.
My mother, she would recite poetry and stories, and you were carried along on the story. So there was always a tradition of storytelling as a form of communication.
For Carol, history was the other big passion in her life.
I liked when history drilled down, but it was more about the people. When the armies had left, what did the people who were left behind feel like? What were their lives like? I loved that, actually. So I think it was very natural for me that when I did go to college, I went to University College Cork, history was going to be my subject. I mean, I don't think I thought too much about that.
It was this passion for unearthing stories from the past that led Carol to study history and archaeology at college before becoming an archivist. After working as an archivist, in Boole Library in UCC, Carl was then invited to help Irish Distillers establish its own company archive.
When I go into work and the records are stacked very neatly and very cleanly, but within those covers, it isn't just dry facts and writing. There's 100 different stories and they're absolutely fascinating.
Matthew and Emily both studied art and design at college. Brought together through a shared passion for photography, design and music, Matthew and Emily started to work together on album covers, music posters and learning how to create designs from scratch all by themselves.
When we started to work together, we were quite a small company then, so we had a very limited budget. So we had to build everything ourselves, and we had to, instead of hiring other people, we created everything. We created the set. If we were going to take a photograph, we built the set ourselves. And we actually ended up quite liking this way of working with the tactile element to what we did. So then it has just kind of stayed with us.
One of Emily's signature styles is paper marbling. This is where different coloured pigments are gently layered on top of each other in a solution before swirling them to create totally unique eye-popping patterns that can then be transferred onto paper. Paper marbling has been done for hundreds of years, but for Emily, it's a way for them to connect to their designs.
It's really important that we have a strong connection to our work, and when you make a mark on a piece of paper, your brain is connected to your hand moves, and the mark is made, and that kind of connection to you personally makes what you're making more valuable to you. And I think if you value what you're making, then in the end the client will also value it.
For Matthew and Emily, they've been telling stories through design for years. They've done everything from delivering concepts for Lego, creating furniture from industrial waste, and most recently, the pair took part in a design residency at Facebook. But their biggest job to date was with Irish Distillers.
Before, we were doing experimental design, but we were doing it to people who were already ready to embrace experimental design, like musicians, but to try to bring that aesthetic into a different world, like the whiskey world. That's been a really interesting journey.
Emily designed the bottle and branding for Method and Madness, an experimental new range of spirits from Irish Distillers, the first in 40 years. Before they could even begin work on the design, they went to Midleton to learn more about the story behind Method and Madness.
One word or one phrase that really stuck with us at the beginning when we met the blenders and everybody working in the distillery was liquid experimentation. We thought that was really beautiful.
This concept of liquid experimentation really clicked when they visited the archive and met with Carl Quinn to explore over 250 years of bottle design.
Well, people are often very interested in how is the archive used? You know, why does Irish Distillers invest? And they do invest in their archive. And it's very often it's a stimulus both for new products and also for the design of the packaging of new products.
One of the objects that Carl brought out that day was a series of old journals filled with experimental whiskey recipes. But on the cover of each book was that same marbling effect that Emily loved to experiment with.
How can you visualise liquid experimentation? Like for us, like that is the perfect way because the pattern is generated on a liquid, you know. So it was just like so solid that it was kind of like unquestionable to be able to use marbling.
The bottles and labels for the Method and Madness range are things of beauty. But what really jumps out at you is the different coloured marble patterns used across all 10 different bottles from the Method Madness range.
And when I actually saw those labels and I saw the way it harked back in such a subtle and imaginative way to what we have in the archive, that for me personally was one of the ones that I was most excited by of the collaborations that I've done.
For this last episode of A Perfect Blend, we wanted to reunite Carl with Matthew and Emily to talk about not just how stories are made from our past, but how important it is to archive them for the future. The last time the three met was at the launch of the latest release from Method and Madness. including the micro-distilled gin that Carol happens to have in her hands.
I'm keeping the bottle, obviously, because it's so lovely.
Cool.
I've heard people are making decanters out of it because of the shape.
That's amazing.
That must be really nice, though, when you see something you've designed take on this other life, because you designed a bottle and a label, but it's become a gift. It's become something that somebody rewards somebody else or celebrates their own creativity with.
It is lovely, actually. It is lovely to make something physical like that.
I suppose for me, I've worked with a lot of different design agencies over the years because we have such a wide portfolio of brands and products. But it did stand out for me that ye did have a different approach to a lot of other agencies. It was a much more tactile, a more physical approach. Mm-hmm. And is that something that is across all of your projects and your own sort of design ethos?
Yeah, you could say so. We always try to bring in a human element. So even if something's created on the computer, we always try to add something that reminds you that it's actually done by a human being.
We've done it from the very, very beginning, and we still, every single job, we try and in some way incorporate something which is handmade.
Which is why I liked working with ye as a creative agency, because a lot of the agencies are purely digital, but ye were also physically creating something. And I got a great kick out of that because when you came in the first time to the archive, what I generally tend to do is just bring out loads of things because I don't know what's going to spark your imagination. And I think for a lot of creative people coming in, you don't know either what it is that you need. It's going to speak to you when you see it. But if you come in with a very fixed idea of what you're looking for, you might, in fact, miss something very, very important.
Yeah, like, for example, those archive books are extraordinarily beautiful. The text is beautiful. The way they're bound is beautiful. The materials that are chosen to make these are to ensure their longevity. But the handwriting, which was practiced, the information is so important that it needs to look beautiful in a way.
Well, that's a funny point that you bring up there, because a lot of people who come in and they look at the records and they say, gosh, how beautiful the handwriting is and how clear and how well people wrote in the past. And I'm kind of there going, you don't know the half of it. But the normal person who's just writing a letter to a family member or a friend, their writing's atrocious. And the first thing you learn as an archivist is to actually read handwriting, and it takes so long. So when you do see the beautiful clerk's handwriting, you know, it's a sigh of relief. I can read this. It's great.
Well, talking about all the different personalities writing letters and so, obviously the master blenders, the distillers, they are visible probably in the archive. But is there anybody that was previously invisible that you have kind of unearthed and brought to attention?
There are a number of people that I feel, probably completely wrongly, that I've got to know through looking through the archives. And I suppose I've almost imposed a personality and a life story on them. But there's one that stands out for me, and it's from the records of a distillery called Hewitt's. And they would have employed, you know, a small army of clerks writing out everything. But in the early days, there's an account book there, and it's a mess. Like, it's an absolute mess. The guy writing it, he's blotting his ink all over the place. He's crossing things out. There's no way he's been hired, you know, in as a clerk. He has to be related to the owner. He has to be. And he doodles. Like, the guy is so bored. He obviously doesn't want to be an accountant. And he's drawing little doodles and he's drawing faces as they go past the window, which I'm thrilled with because I'm getting these faces of people from, you know, 150 years ago. But after a couple of years, he disappears and all the accounts are really orderly and everything. And I kind of like to imagine that his uncle came to him and said, do you know, you're really brilliant. A bright lad like you shouldn't be stuck here. Why don't you try America?
The furthest place.
Yeah, so I've created this whole world around somebody from nothing but, you know, a few blots of ink in a copybook. But you tend to do that, yeah. You know, the personalities do come out, and you tend to almost imagine you're friends with them, really.
For April Fool's Day now, we're going to write you a letter from America.
dear uncle, things aren't going as well as I hoped.
In really bad handwriting.
In really bad handwriting. I think that's the power of handwriting and something tactile. You know, the person has touched the paper. As you're touching the paper, you're touching it as that individual did. And it is a connection. It's for me, it's very much a connection into the past and to the human being who created the record.
When you think of archives, you might imagine old, dusty libraries preserving forgotten records from the past. But these days, as we rush to document every single second of our lives online, we've all become archivists, but with no real place to store everything.
Like we were discussing with our friends there yesterday in the playground when all our kids were playing with each other, the whole idea of like all these images you take of your children, where are they archived and will those archives exist when you grow older, when they grow older? And like just that, the idea of the kind of the archive of the family album and then versus the cloud, and a new mobile phone could be filled up with 1,000 images and then that mobile phone ends up in a jar somewhere or a drawer somewhere. Those images are there. Will you ever retrieve them? And that whole idea is kind of a little bit scary to us. Like the idea of this kind of archiving of your own history and what will be saved from that.
Well, from my point of view, I think people are almost obsessed with documenting every aspect of their lives. And I suppose as an archivist, I should be saying yay. But as a person, I'm saying no. You know, live in the moment. You don't need a snap of absolutely everything. But when you do take something, print it out, maybe just invest a little bit more in the paper that you're printing it out. And please write on the back of it who's in the photograph. The amount of times I look at a photograph and just wish that I knew the names of the individuals. So I would say to people every now and then, just download a few. It doesn't have to be the 10,000, you know, that you're storing, but just download a few from a nice moment, you know, from Christmas, from a birthday or something, and write the names of the people that go along with the photo.
Because generations down the line, it's so valuable when you find an old photo. Like that feeling of that connection to the past is so valuable. Whenever I see, and they're so rare within my own family, I'm just, the idea of imagery and even notes or diaries being all digital, archived digitally, and how flimsy that can be. And, you know, generations on from our son, I hope that we archive our current life and his growing up so they can see him and have that connection to us when we've passed on.
It feels so uncertain just from year to year almost, how you keep your own archives.
Yeah.
But then there's obviously a lot of things you don't post, and that falls outside then and goes missing into the abyss.
That's the thing though, nobody at any point in the past preserved everything about themselves. You know, I wouldn't get too worried about, I haven't documented every aspect of my life and every thought, every deep thought I've ever had. That doesn't occur for anybody. All we get is these little snapshots. And when you look at one physical image or one physical item, it's a starting off point, I think. And I think that's how ye were able to use the archive. You didn't need to know the full story about everything. And you're not at all trying to recreate the past or recreate what it was you were looking at. You were using it to inspire your imagination. It's almost a thread coming from the past. And that's what I like about using the physical items to inspire.
When we think of like Middleton, the distillery in Middleton, it is a beautiful place, lots of beautiful old buildings, a really rich history. But I think after we talk to you, we kind of feel like much, much greater love and connection to that place through the conversations we had with you. So that's what that, like, I hope that when we pass on from this earthly plane, that that a carol kind of comes into where maybe archive something from us.
I've got a job for the future.
A huge thank you has to go to Carol Quinn and Matthew and Emily from M&E for being our guests on this episode of A Perfect Blend. You can explore the work of M&E on Instagram. M&E Studio Sweden is where you'll find them. Also, a special shout out to Carol's husband, Harry, for his help with the recording of this episode. That was the final episode of the series, but you can listen back to all four episodes of A Perfect Blend on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts from. A Perfect Blend was hosted and produced by me, Julian Clancy, and it was a four-part mini-series from Irish Distillers. Thanks for listening. Always drink responsibly.